Hello, I'm Susie Friedman. I'm with a group called the Environmental Defense Fund. And despite our scary name, we actually focus a lot on collaboration and looking for solutions and working with partners on the ground. My main area of focus is agriculture and particularly within the Chesapeake Bay. Some policy, but mostly projects, including the Bay Farms project that Tom mentioned earlier. We're actually doing similar work and have stolen shamelessly from ISA in bringing and adapting the on-farm network approach to not only the Chesapeake Bay, but we've also then based on seeing it work a lot there, are now doing it in the Western Lake Erie Basin in Ohio and a little bit in Indiana, as well as in North Carolina. So in total now, we've got about 130 farmers in Pennsylvania, I think about 50 in Virginia. We just started working there this last year, 7 in North Carolina, and about 80 in Ohio and Indiana. So gaining in numbers and seeing a lot of benefits to this collaborative and adaptive management approach. So I'm going to talk kind of a combination of looking at this from the perspective of an environmental organization, but also looking at the issue of conservation programs and the role that they can play in moving the ball forward on adaptive management. I just click to move it forward. Okay. So looking at nutrient management planning generally, in Chesapeake Bay and a lot of other places, we've been investing significant amounts of money in developing plans. And I think a critical question that we're facing right now in the Chesapeake Bay and in other places is, what are we getting out of those dollars that we've been investing? And I think the it's fairly clear that we're not getting as much as we'd hoped for. And so is it that they're not being implemented? Are they not helping deliver the kind of change that we need and hoped for on the ground? And what is a better way to move forward? And we're pretty convinced that incorporating these adaptive management approaches and gathering a greater variety of information and that feedback loop back to the farmers and engaging the farmers in a different way can really help us get a lot more out of the money we're investing in nutrient management and have it work better for the farmers as well. So as I was just starting to say, I think a new strategy that and a lot of what has been talked about already today can provide a lot of benefits. And the way we've been working with the farmers in this on-farm network that Tracy's been doing in Iowa and we've now been doing in the Bay, really engaging farmers in a different way, really having them be a part of looking at the data and making decisions about what should happen on their farm, really looking at the science and having economics be a big part of the discussion. And looking at the science and the economics is a big part of how an EDF likes to get engaged in projects and have those really be a big part of the discussion in addition to the collaboration. So this fit really well with the way we like to go about addressing conservation issues. And we've really seen the adaptive management approach in this on-farm network delivering real results. We've seen better management based on that better information, really getting back to the information is power and protection idea, really looking at how do you continually improve over time and continually evaluate what's going on the farm, as we were talking about, really engaging the farmers and connecting the economics to those decisions. And in our winter meetings, you know, what is the science saying? What is the data saying? What is the economics of the decisions we're going to make really become a part of the discussion that the farmers really drive it in those directions. So here are a couple of examples of how we're using this information and the kind of changes that farmers are making from our specific experiences in the Bay Farms on-farm network. There's one farmer who has a dairy farm, fields with long-term manure history. We're consistently testing high based on the corn stalk nitrate test, even though he was applying at the recommended rate. So he gradually began to reduce on those nearer fields and transporting his manure to some of his fields that were further away, and saw an increase in yields in those fields when he started replacing some of that commercial fertilizer with manure and seeing that bump from the value of the manure. So a real win-win situation. He was evening out his corn stalk nitrate results, getting better value out of that manure, and we were seeing less runoff. And then another one, and this really gets back to follow where the what the science says, and this is also really important to our project, is the places that came up, the cornstalk nitrate test and the aerial imagery showing that they, those fields or parts of those fields were deficient in nitrogen, and looking to increase the amount of nitrogen being applied to those fields. And that might surprise some, and certainly surprise some of the farmers when we first started working on the project, before they really got to know what we were about and what we were looking to do. Was, you know, when the results came back and said that they were low and that they would benefit from more nitrogen, you know, what is Susie Friedman from EDF going to say? And we said, apply more nitrogen. And I think that's really important to having the whole project work, that, okay, you can say, okay, we need to follow the science when it's saying too high, but then you also need to follow the science when it says too low. You can't kind of pick and choose. And so they applied more nitrogen, got the CSNT values into the optimum range, and the yields increased, which, again, I think is a win-win on both sides, because you're seeing the yields increase. It's going to be taking up more of that nitrogen. So then turning to the incentive and cost share programs, and this was also a significant interest for EDF from the beginning, looking at programs like the Environmental Quality Incentives Program and the state cost share programs that were putting a lot of money into nutrient management and offer very significant resources for providing conservation on the land. How can we better leverage and better incorporate those programs into our program? And then really looking at, okay, what are the changes that would benefit these programs and being able to take this approach to other places? And we found that it was a bit of a struggle in the beginning, that there was a certain mold that those programs had, and we had an approach that we were trying to take, and they didn't quite meet. And so we've over the years been engaging in conversations with Tom, with Tracy, with others, with NRCS, and with state folks on looking at what was coming out of our project, looking at the cost share programs, and trying to figure out, okay, where's the sweet spot between the two? What are the adaptations we need to our program? What might be the change that could happen to those programs? And a couple of the things that became really clear was, all right, there's money that can come out of these programs, but there's a whole different approach that we're doing through the on-farm network in terms of engaging the farmer. It's not just, okay, what is EQIP paying for in terms of the practices, but then how that information gets used and how does that piece get incorporated into these programs. And we've really learned that that's the hardest part. How do you change how the farmers are engaged, how the information gets back, how you pool information and tie that into these programs, and that's proved a significant challenge. So we've really been looking at both the recommendations and the farmer engagement piece and creating that feedback loop, and how do you shift from generalized recommendations to being able to continually incorporate this information into how those recommendations are made and fully engage the farmers in that discussion. And so as we've been moving forward with the program in the Bay and in other states, we've been looking at, okay, how do we use these programs while also trying to find resources to create the infrastructure and the network that we really think makes the whole thing work. We think it's really important that these two things work together to get the most out of each. And so I think that's an ongoing dialogue that's part of this discussion later when Chris talks, and ongoing efforts to try to bring these things together. So what are some of the key things from our perspective in terms of bringing adaptive management into these assistance programs? I think really needs to look past going just the practice implementation. That's a really important piece, but it's really just the first piece. Really increasing the focus on the tools that provide evaluation. So not just, okay, apply X rate, but what are the evaluation tools that are going to allow the farmer to continually evaluate whether that recommended rate is the right one and how does that change over time in both the in-season and the post-season tools. In our project, we've really focused on the aerial imagery, on the corn stalk nitrate test. We've also been using the pre-side dress nitrate test, but there are others as well, and how do you incorporate these in? In some places, you can get cost share for using those tools, in other places not. How do you bring those in? I think that piece is moving forward. Then the coordinating the infrastructure to collect this information and not just have the straight results go back to the farmer, but have it analyzed, have it aggregated, so you can get the benefit of the work group and the farmer groups at the local level, and feeding that back to the farmers, not just as a report, but as Tracy was talking about and Tom was talking about, bringing those farmers together to discuss that and discuss it in a small group and where they're comfortable. And continue to learn from that information and make decisions themselves about how to use it. So coordinating that infrastructure is really important. And again, the flexibility to follow the data, and that can be a difficult piece too. I think that there's a lot of openness on the part of agencies to say, okay, well, if the data says apply less, sure, go ahead, that's fine. But what if the data says you should apply above the recommended rate? We need that flexibility as well, and that can be a tough piece to incorporate. And the flexibility to reevaluate which practice is better than another, as Tracy's data was showing, sometimes you get surprising results, and being able to use that information and not have to wait 5 years for it to go through a very long evaluation process to say, okay, well, here in this watershed, we're seeing that this practice is not as bad as we thought, or this one is clearly much better, or if we do it this way, it works, and we're keeping using it more efficiently and reducing losses. So next steps, as Chris is going to talk more about looking at what are the guidelines for utilizing and incorporating adaptive management approaches into these programs. A really critical part is going to be identifying the partnerships that can help create the infrastructure in different places. This can't all be done by NRCS, it can't all be done by the state agencies, it can't all be done by ISA, and in different places it's going to be a different combination of entities. Extension is obviously critical, conservation districts, and figuring out what that combination of people and entities is in different areas and being able to connect them and help them move forward. And then training and outreach to engage more and more people in this approach, and what are the resources to keep this whole ball moving forward. So that came out funky. You can see half my name. Anyway, that's the end of my talk. I don't know how much time I have for questions, but I'm happy to take any. Oh, definitely. And I think you need to be looking at the full picture. So clearly, if your main source of nutrients is manure and you need more nitrogen, but you're too high in phosphorus, manure is not going to be a good option. So you might need, in some cases, more commercial nitrogen. But I think you need to be able to look at the big picture and see what the combination of that information says. I think you need to be, again, looking at the big picture, and also, and this is something that we haven't really talked about, we generally don't start encouraging farmers, at least within our project, to make changes based on the project until they've been engaged for a couple of years. So it's not like, okay, you get one test result back, okay, change everything right now, and making changes gradually so that you're not, kind of upsetting the whole apple cart. But I think you need to be able to look at not just the test results in isolation, but working with the farm advisors who are working with that farmer and getting a fuller picture of what is the combination of things happening on that farm. So again, don't look at that corn stalk test in isolation, but look at it in the context of the management that's on that farm. And we've really worked very hard to engage the advisors that the farmer's already working with in the project. So we're not going out and trying to introduce a new relationship to the farmer, but engage the person that they're already working with and has experience with the kind of management that they have. I don't know if I've answered your question.
But I have a point. You mentioned management twice for low test, but could it be also low because you have a lot of bleaching of weather or denitrification even with a I just saying that maybe not only looking at management, but could it be something else too?
I'm just saying these type of tests, I think we can all agree if you find something that's consistently in the excessive level, that we can all agree that what we're going to do in that situation. The challenge is when people are in the deficient zone, there could be good reasons why they're in the deficient zone, and there could be mismanagement reasons why they're in the
right.
And my point was, and I got that one, but my point was, could the weather be create a deficiency? Could the weather create a you may want to say something, but could a high precipitation leach out the nitrate, or could a high precipitation denitrify it? I don't know. I was just, it might not all be management. For low, maybe.
And again, getting back to the, is it nitrogen? Is nitrogen the reason it's low, or are there other management things going on?
We have time for one more question. So. Okay. Yeah, well,
what time?
I have no idea what time it is.
Susie, I think we're kind of still missing one last linkage here when we're putting together our infrastructure to reply back to the producer on his production goals. We got to kind of reply back and have an infrastructure to say what was your impact upon the environment too. And there has to be some feedback, either high or low, that says you're doing a good job for your production, but you're also doing a good job to save some
yes.
of the resource concerns that many of us have.
Oh, definitely. And we got into this project looking, to help improve water quality in the bay. So that's clearly a very big interest and is a big part of a lot of our discussions and when more.
How do we show that in these groups? How do we talk to these producers in line with that? That says, you're doing a fairly good job on production, but you're still leaking out too much nitrogen, or you still have too much phosphorus, or your carbon is diminishing. Can we tie that into the infrastructure?
We do. I mean, that we do that in all of the conversations with the farmer. So it's looking at the production levels, the economics, the environment, and trying to.
We have to quantify it, right? And how do you measure it?
I think
the amount of nitrogen that came in.
We need to move.
Yeah.
To get to
Susie, we need to move.
Okay.
Okay, guys, I'm going to claim a moderator privilege. We need to move to the next one. I'm sorry. I want to say thanks to Susie.